Hey, so here's an idea about how to get support for an idea and why each of us operating as individuals, as non sort of reporters or pundits or contributing editors or columnists or, I mean, think about it this way. If Let's say I write what I think is an important piece or a seminal piece, something that I've been working up to for a while, and I really want people to think about it. Not for my own self-glorification, although there's got to be an element of that in it. Everybody wants credit for their good ideas or for their, but there's got to be something more to it, that this is something that you should all think about, and then please steal the idea with attribution. I wrote one of those pieces the other day, and I'm kind of tired of, and I was never really comfortable with the idea of sending a link to people I know, who I think would agree, and saying, "This is an important idea. Would you please pass it around?" Because I don't know why we won't say that. I won't say that. I'll say, if you think this is interesting, actually, I'll say, I hope you find it interesting. I don't go that far and say, if you find it interesting, would you please pass this along? I won't do that. I'll say instead, I think you might find this interesting, which is coded language for, hey, this is important. Please pass on a link. And anyway, so Doc Searles just posted something. Let's see if I can find it. I retweeted it. It was on Twitter. And I will post it to my link blog. And one of the reasons I'm doing this podcast right now is because I'm thinking about link blogging, because I'm working on Radio 3, fixing bugs, tuning it up. God, it's been years. It's been like 5 years since I've changed anything in this code. And, since it's about connecting to other components of the internet, it's what it's all about. It's about connections. Well, then a lot of the pieces of it don't work anymore because things change. Like, for example, WordPress changed their API. So the support that I had in there for WordPress, it doesn't work anymore. Same things. Actually, not the same thing's true with Facebook. It's even worse. Facebook completely turned off the API and went through this whole process of notifying me, hey, if you don't fix this thing, Radio 3 is going to start having errors. And I thought, well, it's kind of appropriate. You just turned off the feature. Why shouldn't it have errors? It's like, what do you want me to do? Oh, you want me not to have the errors show up, right? Well, when I get around to it. Well, I've gotten around to it, so I'm taking those things out. And I'm thinking, okay, so Doc posted this thing, dear publishers, please get rid of the thing that says we see you are using an ad blocker when in fact the reader's browser is only blocking tracking, and start running ads that don't require tracking. I mean, the point being is that we're not really blocking your ads. I don't give a shit about your ads. It's the spying you're doing on me. And actually, to be truthful, they do some very annoying things with their ads, and I'm objecting to that too because I don't know. Don't they care about? If you put all this effort into writing something, and they do. I mean, if I'm reading it, it's got to be pretty good, right? And then all of a sudden, while you're in the middle of a sentence, it just erases the whole screen and says, "Oh, by the way, we have this newsletter we'd like you to subscribe to." And I never know whether or not that is because they think I'm about to leave. I think that I've made a gesture of some sort that makes them think this is their last chance to impress me with their great idea for a newsletter, which is not very original, I gotta say, because they're popping up everywhere. My approach to that is I put a very long message at the bottom of every page on my blog, and I tried to make it entertaining, and it's the pitch for, why don't you sign up for the newsletter? But you have to kind of go there to get the pitch. But I also try to put Easter eggs down there as well, and whenever I have an idea for an Easter egg, that's where it goes. And so I don't know. I mean, I think that's the way the world should work. Instead of forcing you to do something, make them want to do it. You know, put a little treat in there. And, you know, so I'll go there because, oh, you know, I like a treat. And I don't mind if you pitch me on something. As long as you do it in an interesting way, fine. You know, I mean, like, oh, boy, am I wondering. The Geico commercials on TV, I absolutely don't mind those commercials. I would choose to watch them. They're so good. On the other hand, there are commercials that they run sometimes that literally it's an emergency. I have to hit the button on the remote that gets me the fuck out of there as quickly as possible. I mean, I literally go to the homepage of the TV set because that's the fastest thing it knows how to do. And I don't hear about it. It's an ad for dog food. And they literally, they show you the dog food. And then they, while they're showing you the dog food, get this, they talk about good poops, how the dog's going to have, I mean, good God. I mean, the dog food looks like that. And I don't like looking at dog food anyway. And I think I had some bad things happen relative to dog food when I was a child. And they're very deep, unpleasant memories. I'm triggered by dog food, to be perfectly honest. I think that would be the right way to put it. Anyway, so Doc says here, you know, this is something, and you can tell he put a lot of effort into it. I wish it looked better. I wish we could do something to make it look better. But that seems to be out of bounds. I can't seem to get there to help him with that. It's as good as it can be. Let's put it that way. And Doc being the avuncular Wilford Brimley type that he is, he also reminds me a lot of, or Martin Sheen reminds me a lot of him, especially as Martin Sheen has gotten older. You know, there's this ad, he's doing an ad now too, which is really hokey, but I can't take my eyes off of it because it's so funny. I mean, because it's Martin Sheen acting like Doc Searles. That's why. Well, Doc being Doc would never say, hey, guys, you know, this is really important. Would you please post a link to this? I can't ever imagine him doing that. He would never do it. And I wonder if in his heart he goes there or if it just never occurs to him that, boy, it would be nice if people really amplified the hell out of this thing. So anyway, so that's the amplification thing is really important here. And this goes back to something that a guy I used to work with, Kyle Shank. Kyle wrote the outliner, that little outliner. It's actually an open source project called Concord. I use it in the outliner that I use. It's a private piece of software I've written just for myself, but I use that outliner to write my blog, and I've written my blog with that outliner for many years now, and it's a very good piece of software. He did a really nice job, and so anyway, he also had another project going on the site, and I don't recall what the name of it was, but the idea was you could lend your Twitter account to a cause, and it would be associated with a pundit, and the pundit would, when they had a big important announcement to make, would retweet that announcement from every account that had been donated. Now, it's a form of spam, and it probably violates the terms and conditions. I don't know if it does. It's harmless, though, because as long as the pundit only uses it infrequently, doesn't use it to enrich themselves, and does it to get ideas out there, and ideas that the person donating the account actually would support. It's not cool to use that feature to promote some cause that, you know, that is inconsistent with the causes they had been supporting before. It's not fair. And so if you know, and I thought it was a brilliant idea, absolutely gorgeous. And I think that a variant of that goes here, and it's related to something that I've been sort of revolving around in my thinking about where this stuff needs to go. This idea of a carass, K-A-R-A-S-S, and it's a concept that Kurt Vonnegut came up with. And what I'm talking about is actually not exactly a carass, but it's close. The idea is that these are a group of people who you've associated with for a long time, and you expect to be associating with them for the foreseeable future. You know, a guy like Doc, there really isn't anything Doc could do that would make me not want to associate with him. And it's not like that, you know, we're both pretty old, and honestly, and, you know, and we've been friends for a long time, since 30 years at least, maybe more. And we tend to show up at the same places, so there's that. And so Doc would definitely be in my carouse. And there are, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 people, maybe more, people who I feel that way about, that that I've worked with them. It's been a long-term thing. I've known them for a long time. There's a case of a friend of mine who I met at Tulane, and we were both math majors. And then he shows up. When I go to Wisconsin, I'm walking down the street, and I see him. I go, whoa, what are you doing here? Oh, no, I'm a grad student here. You know, really? That's funny. I'm a grad student here, too. And then I was walking through the supermarket in Woodside, California one year and turned the corner and there he is again. I mean, it's like basically our lives have been sort of, and he's a really great guy, I have to say. If there was one person I could pick in the whole world that would be sort of like, you know, spooking me, I would pick this guy, you know. There might be others I would pick, but very affable, obviously very intelligent. Now, at this stage in life, very accomplished, you know. Then there are lots of different ways people show up in your life that way. And if Doc, so I would put my Twitter account into this escrow, and Doc would put his in there too. And it wouldn't be one for one, all right? So, meaning, and let's say there were 30 people in this little crass. And we did lots of things together, not just this. I mean, we, you know, we have a chat system where we're always, you know, it's like our little clubhouse. It's only for us. There are rules about what you're allowed to do with stuff that's put there, maybe on a per message basis. Say, well, this isn't something that I want to go outside of this group. And you're honor bound to respect that. I mean, it's not something that you enforce, but hey, we're, you know, we're friends here. It's almost like family. You wouldn't fuck with me, would you? You know, and so, so there are lots of facets to it. With lots of software you could develop around this idea, and I really do think it's needed. It's between one to one, and it's and you know, and things like Twitter, which is just a blast, and it's not like Slack because we're not like working together. We're not part of a company. We could probably use a Slack group for part of it, you know. I mean, Slack's very nice, brilliant APIs. And I mentioned before that, I think I mentioned it, that I have to take out support for a couple of products from Radio 3 because they don't stay compatible. I knew when I tested with Slack, I was 99.9% sure that it still worked because these guys have the religion. And the web religion, the original web religion. And it's beautiful to see it, you know. They might be the only ones who graduated to the level that they're at and who still retain the idea that you don't want to lock your users in. You want to let the world, you want to let them move around if they want to, you know. And you don't want to hold them there because who the fuck wants to be forced to use a piece of software? You know, if you want people to enjoy you and like you and recommend you and feel good about you, then don't force them to use your product. I mean, that's sort of a basic thing. Anyway, so you'd be able to draw from this to the extent that you contributed to it. There would be sort of a reciprocity that would be built into the system. And so if I retweet. It's not like I choose to retweet Doc. I don't get a choice in that. You know, Doc gets retweeted and he gets more flow to the extent that he's put flow in, he gets it out. And so you obviously have to work in concert with people who are inherently generous. Otherwise, nobody will go first and you'll never get the thing off the ground, right? But I don't think Doc should have to ask. And what this does is it sort of helps balance the level the playing field for us individuals out there who are not part of a publication. In other words, if I wrote for, I don't know, just pick any publication. Let's say I wrote for Wired, right? Well, I would automatically get flow for my stories because I already belong, because being part of Wired means I'm part of an association that, among other things, shares flow. In my case, it would be the main thing that I would get out of it, having, you know, because they don't pay much money. You know, you have to do a lot of it in order to make enough money to live off of, and I would never do that. I would only be a columnist. I wouldn't be like somebody that's, you know, my point is that it's not for the money. It would be for the flow and for the influence and for the attention that I could get. And so the thing is that why can't we, outside of working for a publication, and then, by the way, when you do that, you accept all their limits, and you'll push up against them. It depends on how good the management is and how much they want to create a stimulating, interesting publication. You know, I wrote for Wired. That's why I picked it as the example. And when I wrote for Wired, it was very eclectic. They liked controversy. They didn't shy away from it. And I don't know how else to put it, but you could be creative with what you wrote there. That was the whole idea of the publication. And so a lot of really interesting things happened there. And it was a wonderful place to work for, at least for me, for a few years. It was really great. But I'm sure it's not like that today. It's a Condé Nast publication. It's not, you know, it has to stay within certain lanes because there's other Condé Nast publications. And if all of a sudden you start writing about things that are covered by other publications, they're going to go, well, wait a minute. You know, if Wired's going to do that, then we're going to start doing things that Wired does, right? And they also have to... There's pressure to not interfere with the advertising business. So, you know, you don't want to get a reputation for being too critical of a particular company because then they'll stop advertising there, you know. And it's up to them to decide whether you're being too critical. Well, it's up to the company to decide whether you're being too critical of them. I mean, look at all the people that are pulling ads right now from Facebook. That's not even critical. They don't like their policy for nasty political speech. We don't think twice about that on the outside. But in terms of editorial independence, if Facebook were a magazine or a news station, this would create an ethical problem for them because, you know, they feel, assuming they feel strongly that that staying out of the business of people that write for their platform is a very important value to them, they're now being forced to choose between revenue and interference. Now, you may shake your head and go, well, you know, Facebook's evil and that isn't why they're doing it. Well, you don't know that. And it, in a way, it doesn't even matter because, but it also will cripple any competitor of Facebook that comes later. They will also have to do whatever Facebook does. There'll be incredible pressure to do whatever Facebook does. So when we're outside of this, we have this wonderful advantage. I mean, and there are costs to it. I write things about journalism that nobody inside journalism will write. And they don't want to go near me because, you know, they just don't do things like this. And it's very unfortunate that they are such a sort of backslapping, you know, see no evil, hear no evil type of a community. But if one of the members of this community fucks up, and I don't know, it's and they're writing, they're self-referential, they write about each other all the time, but it's always, oh, this really cool thing that this guy is doing, everybody should give them money, you know? And it turns out that it's a scam, and nobody follows up on it and says, well, wait a minute, we all got behind this scam, why did we do that, you know? There's none of that. So they never grow and they never learn and they just keep making that mistake over and over again because they won't criticize themselves, each other. I've been up against that, and that's true in software as well. People didn't like if I said, they loved it if I said their product was great. Oh, you're the greatest guy in the world. I could even say a product is great, but it is impossible that that product will ever be successful. And they'll just treat me like a pariah, like that I betrayed them somehow. No, I didn't betray you. I told you, told everybody what I think is the truth about the product. And if you're making a product and you're depending on people not telling the truth about it, you're not going to have much of a product. It's better for you to face the truth too. And they, of course they do. And everything that's in sort of reshaping journalism is stuck in this mess that of, you know, I don't want to piss this other guy off, so I can't say the truth about this. You know, it would be good if they somebody could just say, look, all bets are off now. We're all just going to say what we think. And you know what? If you don't like it, it can't be worse than what's happening right now, you know? I wish they would. Anyway, so even people outside. Now, Doc is saying things here. And Doc is the most affable man you'll ever meet. I mean, he's, like I said, he's Wilford Brimley and, you know, President Bartlett in one character. And himself, as well as, give him some credit, those guys are like him, too. Your first inclination is to not be angry with Doc. I've commented on this. We were at a conference many, many years ago, and we were sitting next to each other, and I was watching how people were reacting to him, and I realized, I mean, he's saying things that if I said them, everybody would be really fucking upset, you know? But Doc, they love him, and he says these things. He doesn't ever go all the way there, you know? So this thing that he's saying here, he's being critical of publishers, but it's ignorable. That's the thing. And it's ignorable and he's adorable. You know, it's a combination. And of course, it's not good for what Doc is trying to do, right? But if the earth shook when Doc wrote one of these things, well, it might actually upset old Doc because all of a sudden Doc would have to shit or get off the pot. And it's no longer just, you know, asking people politely to do things that they'll never do because they're ignoring him, to, holy shit, they said yes, and now I have to do it. Do I know that feeling? Oh, yes, I do. I very much do. You know, I walk right up to the line and I get the offer and I go, no, I really didn't want you to actually offer it. I wanted to complain about the fact that you weren't offering it. And people are funny that way. We all do that kind of stuff. It's really funny when all of a sudden you get what you want, and then all of a sudden you have to figure out, oh, I never thought that would actually happen. Now I have to figure out what comes after that. So I think this is a really good idea, and you just need an association of people who trust each other and trust the software. And there's a lot of trust involved here, you know? But if it worked, it would be a club that a lot of people would want to get into. And that in itself would add a shine to it, a significance to it, that to the writing that, oh, that's interesting. Somebody from the blah, blah, blah Caress said this. Oh, I'll have to pay attention to this because it's important. You know, that's where we all want to get because we want to build on our ideas. I mean, it's a time when the world needs really good ideas. And it's frustrating that, you know, I've said this a lot of times in a lot of different ways, that the problem is at this late stage, people really should not be in it for themselves at this point. I know that sounds really weird, but it is the truth. You know, why are we having so much trouble, all of us wearing masks? I'm not, of course, I wear my mask. People who are, I would say that good people wear the mask, bad people won't wear the mask. And it isn't a matter of Democrat or Republican, it's a matter of good or bad. Do you have a vision of the world that includes other people, or are you the only person who matters? Would you ever do something that would help everybody else if they will do something, the same thing that will help you? I mean, it's a good deal, but if you won't do it, that says something about you. So it's kind of like that. It's like now we get to a point that at least amongst this group of people, our ideas are going to be heard. Because, of course, this is another important thing, is that when you write an article in a publication that other people write for, guess what? They all tend to read your article too. And that automatically is big influence. And the inverse is true, is that if you don't write for one, and by the way, your competitors read it too. I got to say that, because the universe now gets very big. And but if you're not on one of these trains, or one that people recognize or people respect, or that it seemed to have a lot of influence, well, then nobody reads what you write. It can't be significant. Which is fucked up, because sometimes good ideas come from places that don't have all the check marks, you know? So, anyway, just wanted to put this out there. I've been talking for too long, but this one I'm actually going to publish. So, anyway, thanks for listening. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.